Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Forever Dog.
Comic books, comic time. Writers and artists are on the line. They make a splash as a comic's read and take us on a trip behind the spread. Watch out for comic book commentary. Spinning a winning inside fix, how they got a hot idea. Narrative, character, visual tricks, and bam, onomatopoeia. Uh-huh. It's comic book commentary.
Hi, we're doing it. This is Comic Book Commentary. This is me, Ben Blacker, back again. Hey, thanks for listening to this. As we're recording this, we've just launched the podcast, and the response has been really overwhelming and positive. So thank you so much. That means a lot. You know, this is the kind of thing that I wanted to do because it's the kind of thing I want to hear. And I found when I do that kind of thing that generally other people want to hear it too. So, you know, we're not just doing these things for the sake of doing them. It's been really interesting to me to hear other creators talk about their books. We have the first, besides the Hexwives commentaries that I've done, we have the first few out at this point. And when you're hearing this, we have a month's worth out. But I've loved hearing what went into Iceman and Captain Marvel and all these things. It's cool. So thank you for listening. I hope you continue to listen. And as I said before, I hope you will let me know who you want to hear on this podcast. What books are you reading? What is like top of your read pile every week? And you know, what writers do you want to get on here? Some of you suggested some folks on Twitter, which I really appreciate. I'm at Ben Blacker. You can let me know who you want to hear from. It's led to a couple of bookings already, folks that I wouldn't have necessarily otherwise reached out to. So keep that up. That's enjoyable for all of us. I'm going to try to keep it somewhat brief today. We're talking about Hexwives number 4. I feel like there's so much going on in this issue. So I'm sorry. This was another one where we did a few drafts, and I think I was sort of in and out of the DC offices because we really needed to start moving things along. But, and I think I've said this before, given my druthers, I would just have all of the witches just hanging out and being charming and funny, and like the soap opera aspect of it is what's the most fun thing for me. I like this issue, and I think Mirka has actually done her best work in this issue of the 4 out so far. I think there's just too much plot, and like there are too many boxes we needed to tick in order to move things along properly. I knew that, you know, the witches would need to start to understand what they are again in this issue, and so we started that in issue 3 with Becky killing that cat, drawing blood, and therefore activating her magic. And so now we see the fallout of that, the literal fallout of that. She's up floating, and I love the way that Mirka has drawn this first panel. Becky's expression is just perfect of just this look like, cannot understand what is happening. It's fear and confusion and excitement too, which I really like. And then on page 2, initially my notion was that Becky would be laying on her lawn for quite a while. And it would sort of speak to the way that the women are still not quite together, in that nobody saw her, nobody noticed. So it was going to be a nighttime scene when Izzy first came over, but we wound up needing the real estate. So in fact, that second panel of Izzy noticing, hearing the sound of Becky landing is actually a later addition. Mirka had to draw that in and sort of place it over and between panels one and the original panels one and two. So we could sort of move that forward a little bit and give a reason for Izzy to rush over. I think by this point, I sort of knew who Becky was. I knew I loved writing Becky, and I knew that she was the one who wouldn't be scared off by what had happened by activating her magic. And so the stuff she says, as much as she's confused on these pages two and three, she's also kind of excited. And like, that's why on page three in panel one, we have her hugging Izzy. Is she's like, this is great. My head is screwed on. I know what happened. Finding the references for the witches to make has been really difficult because we didn't want to do too many contemporary references. I think originally in this panel too, where she says, I floated up into the air like I was made of bubbles, was originally I flew up like I was Superman. And I think the editors asked me to change that to something just a little less pop culture specific. We also have, I think it's in a later issue, I'll have to check, that I had Izzy saying, I think I'm a Hulk or something, and that would not fly with DC's legal department. So we changed it to something else. Anyway, I look at this page three, and I love the way that Mirka has laid it out. I hate how many word balloons are on it. This is something I'm constantly struggling with, is how to give you character and how to push the story forward, especially here in like issues four and five, where the story's really cooking now. But without doing so many panels and so much dialogue, like there are seven panels on this page and there are, it seems to me, like 100 dialogue balloons, and that's just too much. But I really wanted to sell this dynamic of Izzy not believing Becky, but being open to believing her, as unbelievable as the situation is. And that takes a lot of nuance, and maybe it's more nuance than a comic can hold, or certainly than I can put into a comic, you know? I don't know. I think it works for the story, but it's still not quite as elegant as I would like. Then we're on panel page four, and we're back in the men's control center. And again, the greens here that Marissa uses are just stunning. If you listen to our issue three commentary, you know that she, from the very outset, started using green to represent control. And so when we're in the control center, green is the dominant color. My idea for this was initially a little more subtle than I think it plays here, that like they'd be looking at this bank of monitors and there'd be cats blocking them. And initially, in fact, in those first three pages, we had we saw the cats in the neighborhood going to seek out the monitors. But we had to cut that stuff for, again, for the real estate. There's just so much story in this issue. Too much? I say yes. There was also on page four, initially, a lot more dialogue. It got pared back pretty late in the process, where, you know, none of us really quite realized how dialogue heavy these pages four and five were until we saw it over the art. And the goal is always to cover up as little of the art as possible. So again, you know, I wanted to give you character. I wanted to get across that, like in panel two here, the men still aren't quite clear on like the details of the witches. You know, we see the one architect here saying it has to be the one with the cat magic. Is that Mabel? To which someone else responds is, no, that's the kid, Domina. And like, they can't even keep their names straight. And what I really wanted to get across here was Aaron hitting home this idea, which had sort of been hinted at, I think, in the previous issues, that he doesn't think of these women as women. He thinks of them as creatures. And so he's telling the other architects, don't make the mistake of thinking Domina is a kid. She's an animal. She's a creature. And so there's this dehumanizing aspect that allows them to do what they do. And that's sort of ingrained to the way the architects think. And so even more so when Ryan, Becky's husband, says, you know, Becky's got attributes for days, he gives me the horn, which is a line I stole directly from the show Fresh Meat, which if you haven't seen it, is really a great show. It's by Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong. It's a British show about college students, and it's so goddamn good and funny and sweet. So when Ryan talks about Becky as, and even though he is objectifying her, he's objectifying her in the way a person would objectify another person, it pisses Aaron off. And he tells him, you know, lock that shit down and gets very physical with him. There's also a joke here, which I don't know, any opportunity I get to make the architects look silly and stupid, I will take. And so when Aaron tells Ryan to keep it in your pants, Ryan's response is, I'll keep it in your pants, which is a terrible insult. And then we get in the last panel here, this young guy telling Aaron that August is on the phone for him. And August is someone we haven't really heard about before. But I wanted to start to seep in the idea that there is a hierarchy here, that Aaron is not the top of the food chain with the architects, and he has someone to answer to. And so you see that play out in the foreground of page 5. And what's happening in the background is more important, I think, is, you know, what's going on in the monitors. Is Becky going to look for evidence of her flying in her house? But Aaron is so wrapped up in talking to his boss that that he doesn't see her. I wrote August, who is Aaron's superior, for my friend Mark Evan Jackson. Jackson, you may know from as Sean on The Good Place. He also hosts The Good Place podcast, which is a great podcast if you like behind-the-scenes stuff, which if you're listening to this, you probably do. He's also he plays Kevin Costner on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and for over 10 years, he played Sparks Nevada Marshall on Mars in The Thrilling Adventure Hour, the show that I wrote and produced with my writing partner. And so the notion, I was trying to think of, like, who's the whitest guy I know? That's Mark Evan Jackson. And I writing dialogue for Jackson, as I've done for, you know, over a decade, comes very easily to me. And so this line, which is panel 3 on page 5, where August on the phone says, you're not instilling confidence, you're doing the opposite, to me is just the most Jackson line. Seek him out. He's a funny guy. Pages 6 and 7 and sort of the whole middle of the issue is playing some of the soap opera, some of the Desperate Housewives stuff that I really wanted to play in this book. And I wish I had the room to play more. I think even at 6 issues, telling this suburbia story, telling this story arc at 6 issues, Bothered and Bewildered, is stretching it. You know, I think ideally this would have been a much shorter arc, because I think there you can only keep the women brainwashed for so long before it starts to get frustrating. And to me, you know, there's a way to slow burn this. There's a way that this actually could have played for 18 issues. And I think part of it comes down to the realities of the comics business. And given, you know, if I had carte blanche, if I could do what I wanted to do with this, we would have shipped 2 issues a week. And in that case, I could have stretched out this first story arc for a lot longer. There would have been a lot more going on. There would have been more of the interpersonal stories, because you wouldn't have had to wait a month between each piece of the story. To me, that's waiting 6 months for a complete story is a long time. But this was, you know, this is how these first Vertigo books were conceived. This is how, you know, all of us did 6-issue first arcs, because that was the mandate. That's what the company wanted. And I think 6 issues works. I think, you know, we get to tell a good story. But I wish, again, if we could do 6 issues in 3 months, it would have been a lot more satisfying to me, because what I'm really interested in is the slow burn, the small movements of this stuff. And I've had to make bigger movements than I think I would have otherwise. So this stuff where Izzy and Nadia don't believe what Becky is telling them gets resolved in this issue. And I think if we had more, if we had less time and more issues, I would have let that play out over a couple of issues and really let them come around and make it look like that they're not going to believe Becky. But as it is, you know, Becky showing up and saying she has proof, I think works. I think, you know, we got around it, but in some places it feels a little fast to me. What I do like, and I think I discovered only in the writing of this, is that this event is a way to bring Izzy and Nadia together more quickly. Then here on page 7, you know, it's just about getting it across. It's getting Izzy and Nadia on board. What unfortunately doesn't work for me in this is the last panel. There are way too many panels on this page, but we had to move this forward. We couldn't afford to give more real estate to this conversation because we had to get Izzy on board so Izzy could get everyone else on board. But that last panel was supposed to be Becky Bentoning, like in ER. And I sent Mirka video. I sent her photo reference, but I don't think she's ever seen ER. She's very young. So the reason we wound up cutting some of that beginning is because sort of late in the game in this issue, I think I had done a couple of drafts before I hit on this idea of Aaron revisiting the Witch Mother and her casting a spell so we could actually see like how the mind control was working. And so taking these two pages where Aaron sort of offhandedly says, give them something pleasant to think about, that's on page 9, was put in after I came up with the thing for them to think about. So I was doing the issue and I needed a way to visually say that their minds were being clouded when they tried to think about having powers or who they are or really anything outside of what the architects wanted them to think about. And that became the butterfly motif that you see towards the end. I think we first see it on page 12, this sort of butterfly background that represents the women being unable to concentrate on thoughts outside of the cul-de-sac, outside of the neighborhood. We then had to go back and sort of back engineer these two pages where we establish what that is. So that meant that the first couple pages got cut back a little bit and some of the middle stuff got cut back a little bit. And I don't think it suffers for it. I think it's better. I think it's valuable to see Aaron actually doing something well, which is, you know, as much as he and the Witch Mother fight here, he's clearly in control. And so making her give the spell to cloud the women's minds, I think is worth seeing. We also get quite a bit of sort of the mythology of the series, which was starting to come into focus for me much more here than it was in, say, issue 1. I'd been thinking about this stuff and like who the Witch Mother is. And here Aaron refers to her sisters. And hopefully those are characters we're going to see as we go forward if you guys keep buying the book. I've written them into issue 7, but issue 7 has not been approved. But I already wrote it. So if we don't get it approved, I'll just put the script online. And you can use your imaginations. I do love how gross Mirka drew the Witch Mother in these two pages. I think she did an amazing job, and I know she enjoyed drawing that stuff. She loves to draw sexy ladies, and she loves to draw gross, horrific stuff. And then again, the colors are just killer here. I mean, like the way in that last panel on page 9 that there are no real boundaries to the walls. There's no real boundaries to the room, I think is really neat. Page 10, I wanted to show that Izzy is still very much under the spell. So we actually get a kind of a nice moment between, or what she would think is a nice moment between her and Aaron, which I hope comes off as, you know, horrible and creepy because we all know the truth. But I think it really works. And I think Mirka did an amazing job, especially in that last panel, of showing the tenderness here that he's faking. I mean, we know that, especially given the last scene we saw him in where he said we don't think of them as human. But it's a very honest emotional moment from Izzy, which is not something we see very often, especially when she knows what her powers are. You know, she can be very sharp-edged, which is what we like about her. It's, you know, it's what sets her apart from some of the others. This scene on 11, 12, I just wanted to be so depressing. I love writing Mabel. I love what a bummer she is. I love how mean she is to everybody. She does not give a shit about her stepdaughter, Domina. And Domina is the one who's sort of taking care of Bradley, whom she thinks is her father. You know, she's had to pick up the slack because Mabel is just sitting at the table drinking, same as we saw her last issue. We also get here on page 12. I wasn't sure, and we did a few drafts of this, how to introduce the thought that Domina got her period because she stopped taking her pills, which means she is bleeding, which means her magic has been activated. And that's why the cats did what they did, and one of them sacrificed themselves to get killed so that Becky could draw blood. Like, it's this whole chain of events. I don't know if I quite pulled off explaining that. I think I might touch on it again in another issue, in the next issue. I can't remember. But hopefully there's enough in there that if you want to connect the dots, you can. But that's basically what happened is Domina went off of her pills, the pills that the architects make them take. So she got her period. So while she didn't know that her magic had been activated, what was going on around her was the cats were sort of conscious and they were talking to each other and they had their whole own little storyline, which if we sold like 25,000 more copies of this book, I'd be allowed to do like a digital 5-page comic where I can show that. But as it is, I can't do that. But if you want me to talk about it on Twitter, I'll talk about it all day because I have a whole drama about these cats. So on page 12, when Domina is talking about hearing the voices, which she thinks is a side effect of having her period, which, like, her mind is clouded. We see the butterflies in the background. She doesn't know what she's talking about. What she's actually hearing is all of her cats talking and plotting. Meanwhile, that conversation is cut short. Unfortunately, I mean, I could have done another page on that, but we had to get the whole group together on page 13, which I think these are the best scenes, is when we get all of the witches together and, you know, in one space, usually under that tree, talking about really anything. You know, again, we'll see like in the second panel on 13, just the hint of the butterflies that Mirka put in because Becky is starting to push out of the brainwashed world and talking about how she flew like a dang Tinkerbell or Dracula or something, a bumblebee. I think that was where we had the Superman reference, actually. And the magic is fighting against her talking about that stuff. And we see the same thing down in the last panel on this page when Domina says that she believes her. It's because, again, she's pushing out against the brainwashing, and the brainwashing is trying to distract them. This two-page scene on 14 and 15 was one of my favorite to write because I only needed to get across one thing, and there are only two characters. And the only thing I needed to get across is the fact that August is coming, and he's an important character. And the rest of it is just I get to play in character. And I think I mentioned in one of the previous commentaries, I really love writing Bradley. I'm writing him as Bradley Whitford, which is a very strong voice to me. And so this line at the bottom of it, where Aaron is sort of placating Bradley by telling him, "You're the best actor we have." And then on the next page, Bradley's line is, "I studied some drama in New Haven, you know," is just like the worst of Bradley Whitford. Like, that's him at his worst. And it's the version of Brad that my pal Josh Molina will make fun of day and night and nonstop. So I put that in a little bit for Josh, who will never read a comic book. But that was for him. And I remember early when I was first getting notes from on this issue, that was Molly's favorite line because it is a purely character thing. It doesn't drive the plot. And again, it's the sort of thing I wish we had more room for. But that's not how comics work. I've been reading a lot of Brian K. Vaughan. I read a lot going into this, but I also just caught up on Saga. I read basically the whole, I reread the whole series, catching up on the second half of it. And I'm just awed by how Vaughan can move plot along so quickly. So much happens in an issue, but there are always these great character beats. And it's something I'm still trying to figure out. And I think on these pages, 14, 15, that's the pace of a comic I like where, you know, there it seems like there's a lot of dialogue, but I think the dialogue moves along pretty quick and it's all very character driven. It's something, like I say, I'm still figuring it out. We did a lot of cutting back on dialogue on pages 16 and 17 because it felt like there's a lot to explain and sort of honing that dialogue so that, and this is the trick, right? Like this is what writing is and this is what writing a comic is, but making sure that the exposition still feels like character stuff is what we have to do. And when we're juggling a scene with six characters here, four of whom are on one side of an argument and two of whom are on the other, it just felt like, you know, there was a lot of back and forth that we did wind up pulling back quite a bit. And I think it does work. You know, I like that Mabel stays in character. She's kind of mean. She's, you know, she calls Becky a fat bird. But ultimately we just needed to get them. We need to get the information out. And then I think this last beat was, came from the editors, came from Molly and Maggie. The idea that every time these women gather together, they're interrupted by one of the men, whether it's on the phone or whether it's in person or whatever it is. And so having that as a way to end the scene made a lot of sense. And in fact, calling it out, you know, for Izzy to say, "I get so distracted." And then on the next page, you know, every time we get together like this, they always break us up. And then Aaron shows up right away. Sort of leads us into the next scene where I wanted to do, this is on 18-19, where I wanted to give another glimpse of here are some small ways the men are controlling the women. But now the women are sort of becoming aware of it. They're seeing the seams. I do want to point out one thing on page 17, panel 3. I love the way that Mirka drew this little moment between Damina and Becky, who... Again, these are two characters I love writing, and this is when Damina's finding out that Becky accidentally killed her cat, and Becky is so genuinely sorry and gives her this big hug. I love both of their expressions in this. I love how the background is sort of like this splashed out emotion. I just love how that looks. It came out really cool. Anyway, 18 and 19 is where we, again, see the men controlling the women, but the women are seeing it a little bit more, and I think you get that from Becky's expression straight away in panel 2 of, like, Ryan's, first of all, demeaningly calling her dumpling, but then saying we go on a shopping spree, but it's going to be an online shopping spree. Also, this thing that Mirka drew of, like, an iPad with a giant shopping cart in it. Look, I know we have to take shortcuts in comic books. That seems insane. The shopping cart would never be that big. This next piece with Nadia looking for something in her kitchen and then her husband, Eric, saying, "I rearranged the kitchen," and he puts stuff up where she can't reach it, This was my wife's idea because this is the way our kitchen is laid out. We don't have that many cabinets, but we have a lot of stuff because we cook a lot. So she can never find anything because all the cabinets are a little bit high for her. And I laid them out because I unpacked the kitchen 3 years ago in a way that made sense for me. I'm a terrible husband, I think is what I'm getting at. Then this next bit is June at home with her husband. I'm on top of page 19 now. And she's telling this long story she's about to say what the women were talking about, but it's clear that her husband isn't listening. And she sort of cottons to that. And so she doesn't go into it. And then a Mabel and Demena scene where this one, I think this turns out to be more about Bradley and Mabel than Demena. I think Demena, we kind of know where she's coming from anyway. But I like how Mabel sort of turned away in the second panel of her scene and how Bradley's response to no more bomb. No, he just doesn't want their hands on him. He doesn't want the kind of attention that they are giving him because it makes him sick. And then finally, I was really looking for some small thing that would make Izzy really see what was going on and get her to make the move that she makes on the last page where she purposely cuts herself. I think this was my wife's idea. The idea that she would have been cleaning and moved something, and just that little thing makes Aaron fly off the handle. And then you know, having it be the bottle, the vase, which I think we all know is a bottle. You guys got there way ahead of me. But having it be the vase so there's actually import to him, there are two levels going on here. So then we have them at dinner, and it's a little more awkward than it's been, right? Izzy, we can tell, I hope, in panel two that she's covering a little bit. She knows things are not normal. And that sort of, haha, you know what a women talk about, is now an act, right? She's sort of scoping things out to see how they go. She's just sort of talking. You know, she's saying words to fill the air until Aaron goes away and she can really get into her thoughts without being distracted, although she is going to be magically distracted, which we'll see in a minute. Again, I was looking for, as he leaves, another small way for him to control her. And this thing about the black knives, or the knives with the black handles not going in the dishwasher, is something that I tell my wife all the time. It is not controlling. It's just because if you put the sharp knife, the good knives in the dishwasher, they get dull. That's all. Finally, we have a version of the 9-panel grid here that starts out. And I think this works. You know, I think we had to add the dialogue just to make clear what she was thinking about. If I had done captions or something early on, we could have used captions here. But I don't mind that she's speaking out loud, coming to the realization that, you know, blood was drawn. Becky killed the cat. Demena got her period. And we get to see, hopefully this makes sense, but we see a lot of butterflies in those first six panels, and then the butterflies fade. And what we're supposed to see in the background there is something that resembles blood. And that's sort of washing away, the brainwashing, as she cuts herself again. And then on page 22, oops is in quotation marks because this was very much on purpose, clearly. And she's buying into the reality, the real reality, right? Her past. And so we're moving the story forward as we come into 5 and 6. We're going to see that Izzy now, if everything works as it ought to, right? If bleeding activates her powers, which we can see this sort of pinkish aura, I said early on, I love the way that Marissa designed that. It was in the earliest scripts that when they're using magic, you're going to see this sort of pink aura surround them. But here on page 22, it's so powerful and it's almost fire-like, fire being a recurring motif in this book. That's the issue. I don't have a lot to say about it that I haven't said already. There's a lot going on. I think I get to pump the brakes a little bit in issue 5 because now that Izzy knows what she is, she has to figure out what everybody else is. She has to figure out what's going on. And I don't want to do a detective story in one issue. So it's a lot of conversation, and it's where character stuff really gets to live. So we'll look at that. Issue 5 will be out in February, the end of February. I hope you will pick it up. If you have questions, if you want me, you know, if there's stuff that you are thinking about this book that you would like me to address, hit me up on Twitter and I'll include it in the next commentary. We could do a little Q&A. That might be fun. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. As I said, let me know who you'd like to hear on this podcast. The comics creators that I've gone to, everyone has said yes, which is really cool. So, you know, the more people we get doing it, I think the more people who will want to do it. So, you know, hit me with your ideas. I'd love to get like a good cross section. I haven't hit up anyone from Archie yet. I'd like to get someone who's writing one of the new Archie books to do it. So I'll do that for sure. But I've hit up most of the people who are writing my favorite books. So let's hit up the people who are writing your favorite books. Let me know who they are. And if you would be so kind, please go leave a review on iTunes. Go give us 5 stars and say, I love this podcast, because it's very helpful to us to keep it going. Thanks as ever to Brett and everyone at Forever Dog for making this happen. And thank you for listening.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.